All right, we are through round one. Did anybody get something out of that first session? Let me hear from you.
Excuse me, pal. How you doing up there?
I'm doing all right. Hey, look at this.
Good to see you. How you folks doing? Good to be here today. I just got to tell you, pal, I'm all excited about this conference. You know that?
Yeah, it's great.
How about you people, huh? You know, I just love this personal development stuff, you know? I stay up late at night just to watch that Terry Robbins guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he really gets me all jacked up, you know?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, would you mind if you turn around, let me give you a little shoulder rub there?
That's great.
I tell you, I love that stuff. But this other guy here, this guy that's talking today, Jim Jones, I gotta tell you, man.
It's wrong. It's R-O-H-N, Jim Rohn.
Hey, pal, you don't have to spell it out for me. Everybody knows Jim Rohn. Look, I've read all his books. I've listened to all his CDs, seen all his movies. That guy is one heck of an actor, isn't he?
No, I
loved him in The Terminator. You know what I mean?
It's a different guy. He doesn't have any movies.
Oh, he's got all those sayings, though.
That's
you know,
right,
that guy's got some quotes like that one, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Boy, he sure knows me, doesn't he?
You know what I mean? That's not Jim Rohn.
Oh, I know the one about 70% perspiration and 150 pounds of deodorant. You know, when I did Witches of Eastwick with Cher, I did a lot of sweating. Let me tell you that.
That's not Jim either. I think you're confusing that a little bit.
How about the one, An Apple a Day Keeps the Doctor Away?
No.
All the World's a Stage and It's Leaving in a Half Hour?
No, it's not him.
Oh, how about A Penny a Day Keeps the Doctor Away?
No.
Not those, huh?
That's not him. I think you're confusing this.
You know, for a guy that talks as much as he does, he sure doesn't say much, huh? Well, you know what I say, pal? I say, don't take your need to the marketplace, take your skill. I mean, if you need a doctor, if you're feeling sick, take it to the doctor, not the marketplace. If you need money, go to the bank, not the marketplace. And if you're feeling a little amorous, go down to the corner, pick up a bottle of aspirin, take it home to your husband or wife, tell them it's for their headache. If they say they don't have a headache, you're ready to go. That's what Jack says. Thanks a lot, pal.
Thanks a lot. Good to have you here. All right, Jack Nicholson, ladies and gentlemen. Well, you never know what you're going to get at a weekend event, do you? Well, our next speaker is truly one of the greats. He's a graduate of the Naval Academy at Annapolis. He's been speaking professionally for 25 years. He's part of the International Speakers Hall of Fame. The Society of Marketing Professionals has named him one of the best speakers ever, as has Toastmasters. And you are in for a treat. He has sold over 10 million audio programs in 14 languages, including Seeds of Greatness, as well as the best-selling audio program of all time, over $100 million worth, The Psychology of Winning. And it is my great privilege to be able to invite to the stage for the weekend leadership event, Mr. Dennis Waitley.
I've traveled the world to the seven seas, been up at the top and down on my knees. When I think where I've been, what I'm going to do, I'd rather be here in Anaheim with you. Yeah, I would. I've been traveling 4 days a week for 30 years. You'd never know I was 28. I get jet advanced instead of jet lag. The old road warriors, Jim Rohn, Zig Ziglar, Norman Vincent Peale, Paul Harvey, Robert Schuller, all the rest. I've known Jim for over 30 years. I remember when Tony Robbins was selling the most Jim Rohn tickets for the Jim Rohn seminars. Winning is never whining. Winning is coming in fourth, exhausted, excited. You came in fifth last time. Winning is treating animals like people and people like brothers and sisters. Losers see thunderstorms, winners see rainbows. Losers see the icy streets, winners put on their ice skates. Losers are aggressive, winners are assertive. They find out what you need and help you get it. Losers let it happen, and winners make it happen. Life is a do-it-with-God-for-others-to-myself project. I looked in the mirror and saw my problem. Me, Rip Van Whately, asleep for 50 years, awakened to a world I never expected. I'm a road warrior. How do they say? Dennis is one of the poet laureates of motivational speakers. The rest of them are dead. You know you're getting old when your back goes out more than you do. The little old person you help across the street, your own reflection in a store window. An attractive woman comes by, you're mowing the lawn, your pacemaker opens the garage door. The feeling is there, but it manifests itself differently. My 3-year-old granddaughter, 1 of 10, said, "Papa, is God the oldest person in the world?" I said, "You could say that." She said, "That makes you the second oldest person, huh?" I said, "I'm the second oldest person you'll meet." Politicians tell you what you want to hear. Leaders tell you what you need to know. Politicians want you to love and respect them and vote for them. Leaders want you to vote for yourself. Politicians tell you what they're going to do for you, and leaders tell you what you must do for yourself. In a world accelerating and fast forward with more changes in one day than in your grandparents' lives. Winning. I've wanted to be a winner. I'm a coach. Winners help other people get what they want in a natural way. Losers would like to earn like, look like, be like somebody else, and the spectators watch it. I'd like to give you 5 ideas today, and I'd like you to look at the PowerPoint as an MTV subliminal cut. You've got it all in your workbook, so I'm not going to try to dazzle you with PowerPoints, because you get caught in them. It ends up being a voiceover PowerPoint presentation, but I would like to give you some PowerPoint ideas and then 5 ideas. The one idea I'd like to give you is that self-determination is a matter of choice. The second one I'd like to give you is that self-esteem always precedes performance. You perform in accordance with your belief. You don't perform and then begin to believe that you're good enough because you've made enough money or performed. The third idea is the mind always moves towards its currently dominant thought. So that's the only reason for goals, is that unless you're setting one, MTV will set one for you. The fourth one is winners are busy doing within when they're doing without. Self-discipline is doing within, not doing without. And fine is self-dimension, getting out of yourself and into the world. So I'll give you this little subliminal cut. The 5 global trends, you know, instant access to information. You can make anything, any place, anywhere, anytime. There are 300 million Chinese with $300 million. That they have. There are 800 million Chinese with nothing, 300 million with $80,000 cash in the bank. They not only make everything that we use, but they're also making things that they use. So they're creating their own consumer base in China. That's why I take my kids there, so they'll know who the competition is. Instant access to information. We're all globally interdependent for our security and our finances. Everyone is at risk. There's no safe harbor, therefore you can't be taken care of by anyone else. There's no safety net, truly. Social Security is not really security at all. Obviously, we have to understand that leaders now must earn trust, not just get it naturally. And we also have to understand that each of you is a brand. You must brand yourself as the brand of choice. And that means you over-deliver and under-promise, always. Always give more in service than you expect to receive in payment, and you'll never run out of payment because people like to get a good deal. So they want you to give more than they're willing to pay. And if you're underpaid for what you do, you'll always be in demand, like a Stradivarius violin. Branding. Your competition for 2005 is a hungry immigrant with a digital handheld assistant. America's made up of immigrants. If your children are to be successful, they have to act like immigrants in their own country. Just by being born here doesn't give you the ability to be successful. It's the work ethic, the pioneering ethic, the service ethic that'll win. Your competition is always a hungry immigrant with a digital assistant. Hungry in the belly for food, hungry in the mind for knowledge. And the hunger is something that should never leave you. I was with the Maasai. The Maasai are the last of the African tribes who have not been, if you will, modernized. I asked the Maasai to define motivation. They said, when the belly's empty, you start to think. If your belly is full, you don't think. If you have it, oh, please don't give your children everything you didn't have, everything they didn't need. If I had two wishes and two were all I had, and they could just be granted by my mom and dad, I wouldn't wish for money and all those store-bought things. The only thing I'd wish for is simply roots and wings, roots of moral values and wings of self-determination. Please don't do things for your children that rob them of the ability to learn how to do things for themselves. Please don't give them everything in money to buy their affection. Their love is not for sale. Personal responsibility, and that'll be the first thing I'll talk about when I get through some of this stuff. The 21st century organization, free agents. What do you mean free agents? Well, your contract is up. What do you mean? You're on the open market. You have to be able to deliver to an organization as a free agent with no guarantee that seniority means anything except vulnerability. So a free agent who are team players, and what is the 21st century organization? If you don't trust each other, you don't have anything in a marriage or an organization. So trust is number one. Values diversity. What is diversity? I'm so tired of things that we see with our eyes. Don't you think that America should be over the eye diversity, gender, ethnicity, color, all of this thing? Diversity is what each of you in this room brings to the table every day in terms of your background and culture. And that's diversity, a diverse culture of people who've been raised differently, who come together in any organization and pull out of themselves the reservoir of talent. Accommodates beliefs. There are so many different beliefs, and you'll never change another person's belief. You'll only make room for theirs. You don't have to believe like other people, but make room for other beliefs. You'll never change a person's deep belief, because that is something that they cling to. Productive conflict. You don't want a yes organization. You don't want people all smoking the same brand of cigarettes because the manager does. You want people who are willing to, if you will, say something that may not be popular. Strong commitment, you know it takes that. High quality collaboration. The best meetings are ones where the person who is the great speaker comes in, and instead of making a presentation, the best meetings are the ones where you ask questions and give each person in the meeting, usually about eight people or six, an opportunity to say what they think the organization needs. At McDonald's, it's called the Big Bad Idea. Every Friday, the hourly workers who are making $8 to $10 an hour are asked what they think the organization should do to change it. How could anyone making $8 to $10 an hour tell you? You know what they do? They tell them they should put a digital clock in so they can see how many cars are waiting. They tell them to put headset on everyone so that everyone hears the order coming in. People closest to the problem and the customer have the best ideas, not just the top leaders. And that's why meetings and collaboration should always be drawing out of people the experience that's closer to the problem. Compelling vision, we'll talk about that. Everyone needs a compelling vision. Widespread innovation, resourcefulness. You can't have more money, so what do you pull out of yourself? And above all, ownership of outcomes. Do you own the outcomes in your life? If life is a do it with God, for others, to myself project, life is a choice, not a chance. It's a game of choice. And there are no timeouts and no substitutions, and the clock is always running. It's not a scrimmage or a drill. There's no instant replay. Every day is the Super Bowl, the Tour de France, and the grand final. Human capital. It used to be that you were promoted based on where you went to school, what degree you had, how long you were with the organization, what your resume said about your responsibilities, and certainly rank and file. How long have you been in that position? Not anymore. In the 21st century organization, it's all human capital. What kind of talent, attitude, what do you bring to the table? What kind of contribution are you going to make to the organization? When you go in for any job, you don't ask them what the benefits are and the number of paid sick days. You tell them what you're going to do for them. And that's why it's human capital. The 21st century employee is a free agent in an open market, so there's no guarantees other than employability. One thing you can say is you'll never be guaranteed any employment by any organization ever again. That's because of global competition and rising expectations of developing nations. No more guarantees. What does it mean then? It means that we're a free agent. We're a self-directed team leader. We want incentives and we want meaningful work. People don't want to work for a tobacco company anymore because it's secondhand smoke. Continuous skill development and lifelong learning, you know that the shelf life of formal education is 18 months. I got a PhD, piled high and deep, phony doctor, big deal, won't buy me lunch. I have to call all the time. Hello, is this Dell? I can't seem to get my computer unstuck. Who is this? This is Dr. Waitley. Are you a PhD? Yeah. I can't get cursor to home. I'm still roadkill. Upward career path, you bet we want to be developed from within. This is one of the most amazing things. Did you know that there's no difference between personal and professional skills? Do you know people get fired for personal reasons? They get fired because they're late, because they don't have good goal setting, that they're just not directed properly within. So there's no such thing as a professional skill and a personal skill. They're all merged together. So personal as well as professional goals. One of the most successful companies in the world, believe it or not, is a casino. The Mirage. I thought a Mirage was something that wasn't really there. Disneyland, you go to have fun, to spend money with your family. In Las Vegas, you go to lose money to have fun. Why would you enjoy losing money? Because of the way they treat you. Well, why do they treat you that way? Only because at the Mirage, they care as much about the personal development of the employee as his or her skills. What do I mean? Where would you like to go to school? We'll help you get a college education. What kind of investments do you need? We'll help you. We'll be your concierge. We'll give you personal development to let you know that we care as much about you as you care about our bottom line. If we want you to help us make a profit, we're going to help you with your life. And if you view people as a total person that has personal as well as professional needs, you've got an organization that's on top. And that's the most well-liked companies to be in business with, if you will. Part of a winning team, who doesn't? Maximum performance in a positive, nurturing working environment. We did a study of 500 Taco Bells, and we thought it was all location, 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 and certainly in real property, and there are many real estate executives here, and no question if you live in California, Arizona, or Nevada. You just stay in your original home and you make a fortune by not moving. Real property in California and the developing markets is a great investment. However, a positive, nurturing working environment for Taco Bell was the thing that made them more profitable. What do you mean? Well, it didn't matter how much further they were off the freeway. If the management treated the employees in such a way that you love to come in their store, because of the attitude of the people, people would go back to a working environment that is nurturing. So if you really want to have a winning organization, have one that really cares about each other, and you'll find that everyone goes back to a company where there's a lot of joy. Human capital, your own assets. Here are just some of the things you need. You're self-employed, whether you think you are or not, and you'll always be self-employed. Risk-taking is the only way you'll get security. If you seek security, you're taking the greatest risk of all. But if you take the calculated risk, you create your own security. There was a very cautious man. He rarely laughed. He rarely cried. He never won. He never tried. He never laughed. He never played. He rarely talked. He never prayed. And then one day he passed away. His insurance was denied. They claimed because he never lived, he never really died. You never want to seek security because risk-taking is security-making. Core competencies. How do you know what they are? When you're 5 to 15, you develop your core competencies because you're born with talents. Talent is inborn and behavior is learned. Talents are little budding things you love to do when you're a child. Watch your children at play. Watch them when they're not in school. Watch what they like to do in the evenings and on Saturdays. What do you like to do in the evenings and on Saturdays? Therein lies your talents. Talents are what you like to do and what you do well. Many people take the first job and stay with it because it's money and they have responsibilities. You really have to find out what you're good at and bring that to work as well as a hobby. Willing to invest the time that the rest of the population won't consider. I'll get to that in a minute. Communicate effectively in oral. Why? Because we live in a soundbite world and you're going to have to present all the time, orally and in writing. This is the age of communication. Concise, accurate analysis. Sound bites, quickly. Tell me about it. Go on the net. A little Google here. Little Yahoo, little Google, Yahoo, download. Did you research it? Yeah. What's the deal? Shall we do it or not do it? I don't have all the facts. You never will. Able to spell without spell check. Why? Because you might have to go to a whiteboard or a blackboard, or you might have to actually write something and you don't maybe not have your computer or spell check. Well, how do you spell? By reading. What do you do when you read? Well, you have a dictionary beside. When you come to a word you don't understand, you look it up and you've got it forever in context. Read everything you can get your hands on. The people that read the most are the most successful regardless of their occupations. Farmer, house economist, whoever you are, when you read, you go where you can't go in person, you save 5 to 10 years because you don't have to make the mistake yourself. Please, if you're young, don't think you have to do everything by trial and error. It's better to learn from people who've done what you've done or haven't done and people who've overcome enormous obstacles to become successful. Reading is the greatest way of vicarious learning. Computer literate? You have to be computer literate. You have to be high touch, high tech, both. You can't be one or the other. You need to be both. Everything will be handheld, wireless, digital, and you have to be that way. Self-motivated, lifelong learner. The shelf life is 18 months, so you have to continue to learn, which is why you're here. Comfortable with uncertainty, because change is constant. Confident enough to make suggestions and mistakes. You have to be willing to risk being a fool. Did you know that there was a winner who wasn't a beginner? And when you begin to do anything new, you look foolish and stupid. When you try anything new, and most people don't want to do anything new because they'll be laughed at and looked at as foolish. Risk being a fool to be a winner who's a beginner. Trustworthy, to give first, and passionate and considerate. Here are the trends. Constant change and insecurity. Direct, direct, direct. That's the battle cry of Michael Dell. We'll talk about Michael Dell in just a minute. Go direct, eliminate the middleman, keep more of the profit on the bottom line. Dell Computer was the first into retail and the first out of it. They were into retail in 1990 and out of retail in 1991. No margin in retail. All the margin is going direct. For walk-in business, we'll put you out of business unless you're Starbucks. Starbucks, sure, we go to Starbucks, of course. But you don't want to wait for walk-in business. If you're in banking or finance, you go out and get it. You don't wait for walk-in traffic. Not in brick buildings anymore. This is a proactive world. Goods and services are like publicly traded stocks. Just ask eBay. Everything has a price and a level, and it's buying and selling. Goods and services are just like stocks. Choice, competition, price, value. The online learning revolution, unbelievable ability to download and learn online. The B of I is the Bank of Internet, online financial services, home-based businesses, energy generation. You get the picture. And then Florida, USA. I like Florida, USA because it's a NARC. Now, we know what a NARC is. A NARC is a naturally occurring retirement community. America looks just like Florida. Japan looks even more like Florida. There are more old people in Japan than there are young people. And so the graying of America with the baby boomer bulge do a lot of things that old people want, especially grandparents, and you'll make a fortune. Because the older we get, the unfortunate, we as 70 million Americans are going to want their Social Security within the next 5 to 7 years. Health and wellness. Of course, Jim talked about health being the one thing that you can't buy back once you've lost it. Wireless communication, online shopping and finance, training, retraining, staffing, PEOs, daycare, women work, coffee, juice, salad on the run, assisted living, old people, home meal replacement, old people, alternate health, allopathic medicine won't do us good enough, alternate health remedies, energy generation, because we're worried about it. In China, I was in China 2 weeks ago. They have more hotels going up than any other place in the world. In Shanghai, they have more cranes to build. They're building more. They forgot one thing, power. How would you like to go to a big convention in China and have there be no air conditioning in the hotel in the middle of the summer? The bellman cannot use the elevators and have to walk up five stairs before they're able to take the elevator, so five stories with bags makes it difficult. You get a suite in China, there's no air conditioning. Why? Power grid. Overbuilt, less power. California, we're worried right now. If it gets too hot, we may have another blackout or brownout in one of the most productive states. Energy generation, personal and business security, and women's sports. After all, women are equal, at least. They are. I really do believe that, too. After all, I have five daughters. Toilet seats are all down in our house. They gave me a urinal in the garage with a carpet underneath. And pet services, because we actually are nicer to our pets than our children because they're loyal. And they're always glad to see us, and they begin to look like us after a while. So pets are something that we have. Michael Dell, I've been traveling with him. It makes me angry. He was born in 1968. I was already brilliant then. He was sucking a pacifier, and I was a brilliant psychologist. What happened? How can he make 20 or 30 billion? How can he be the richest person in the world under the age of 40 until the Google IPO comes out? Then he won't be the richest person in the world under the age of 40. They will be. Bill Gates is old now, 48. What does he know? Eliminate the bureaucracy in whatever you're doing. Market segmentation. This is what's great about information technology. Information technology lets you know everything about the customer. And if you buy a Dell computer, for example, and go online, the ability to get information about someone and to deal with them on the telephone through IT, information technology, gives you an ability to market direct to me. So marketing has moved from mass marketing to me marketing. It's differentiating what you want and giving you more of what you want. And this is the beauty of having a combination of internet-based and personal communication, because you can give people more of what they really want and use those triggers. And Dell is the best at what they do. $22 million each and every day, only on the internet and by telephone, no salespeople. $22 million every day. Short shelf life of inventory, real-time manufacturing. The customer owns the market, so you can't have old stuff lying around. If you want loyalty, treat them like royalty, 24/7. The customer owns the market. Know thyself. The Olympic Games in Athens starting in a week. Know thyself. That's on the temple. The key to leading others is to first understand and lead yourself. Jim said it. You lead yourself, you understand yourself, and then you're capable of leading others. The four cornerstones of leadership. I just did a program for the United States Marine Corps and Navy before they were going to Operation Iraqi Freedom. And because I had gone to the Naval Academy with Ross Perot, how would you like to have gone to Annapolis with Ross Perot and have him be the big brother who yells at you? 5'6" with a butch haircut, his hair never grew. His bank account did. But he yelled at me. He's like Zig Ziglar with a soprano voice. Mr. Whately, you're the grossest plebe I've ever seen. Sir, I'm going to the Folies Bergère and meet a French ballet dancer. I'm 19 years old with raging hormones, sir, and I'm going to go to the Folies. No, you're not. You're going to the Tuileries and the Louvre and take photos. You're an officer. I said, I'd rather be an enlisted man now. Vision, reality, ethics, and courage. but four cornerstones. If you're a visionary, you not only see the future as you would like it, and then people like people who see the future better and more specifically, but a real leader can empower other people to see their vision and have it tie in. A lot of people fall short. There are a lot of people with vision. There are very few who are able to tie other people into that vision and make it their vision. Remember, envision is more important than just vision. Realist. We're pretty good at that. We deal with what's available. How much money you got to work with, what's your education, how old are you? You're realistic about the parameters, factual, that you're limited to dealing with these hard factual things. Ethics. I could do 2 hours on ethics. Of all the things I know, this is the most important of all. Non-situational integrity and a higher level of human values ruled by principle rather than fear or pleasure. Lying is non-situational. Either are honest or you're not. There's no such thing as being almost pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. You're either honest or you're not honest, and it has no shades of honesty. And to be able to do things without pleasing yourself, to be dishonest, or to be able not to cover up something you're afraid of and be dishonest, is making the hard choices of ethics. But I can tell you it develops trust when you do what you say, and if you can't do it, you tell them you can't do it, and if you're a person with personal and professional integrity, they can't stop you. Billy Graham is one like that. I get a kick out of Billy Graham. He looked at me and said, "How many lives you changed?" I said, "One." "One." "I've changed one life, sir, mine." He said, "Me too." He said, I give them lots of literature and I give them a good motivational talk, and they come down from the stands to the infield and they pray with me, and I give them literature and they go back to being themselves unless they're ready to make a commitment to change themselves. "You don't change anyone, Dennis." I said, I know. So don't start reading your own PR. Best leaders of all are very ethical and very humble, and very approachable. Why? Conceit is God's gift to shallow people. People with low self-esteem are calling for help, and they need a lot of attention. Courage. I thought courage was running up a machine gun nest, throwing a grenade at it, and blowing yourself up with the enemy. Courage is the ability to get out of your comfort zone. It's based mostly on training and experience and knowledge. To be able to make a decision to internalize personal responsibility. We rate ourselves pretty good on realism. I think most of us are pretty realistic about what we've got to work with. We rate ourselves way too high on ethics. Most people can't make the distinction between bottom line, money, and people. We are mistaken on vision because we don't inspire other people enough and help them innovate, and we're much too high on courage. The problem is we lecture on courage, but we don't get out of our own comfort zone, so we need to set the example. I've been working for many years with our Olympic athletes. I was chairman of psychology for the United States Olympics for 12 years, 80 to 92. And there are success traits that we look for in every athlete and coach and leader, and there are problem traits. Interestingly enough, the problem traits will get in your way more than the success traits will help you. So, of course you need self-confidence, but a different kind. The confidence you need is in your potential. Because if you're confident that you have potential, if you see world-class potential in yourself, you'll put in the effort. If you don't see the potential, you won't put in the effort and you'll wait for the performance. But performance always follows the belief in self. So confidence is a combination of believing in the potential and then once you start doing things, of reinforcing the success. Ambition is always wanting to be better than you are and not resting on laurels. Conceptual thinking is the ability to put together a vision of the future that you can see in a way that the mind can grasp it as a realistic goal. And mental toughness is the ability to handle enormous setbacks. You'll find that every winner, like Lance Armstrong, can handle the fall or the cancer and handle it because they have the mental toughness to continue to persevere. The problem traits are ones I worry about because in our society, we live in a skin-deep celebrity culture, and we have this lack of self-control. We have people that are off the wall. They get angry. There's road rage, job rage, every kind of rage, air rage. Everyone gets upset all the time over trifles. People look at me and say, you big, fat, dumb klutz. We hate you, your religion, your mother, and your country. I said, really? That's interesting. I'll give that some thought, maybe. We hate you. You got a big nose, big ears, buck teeth, and you're not as good as Tony Robbins. I said, I'm into a self-improvement program and need lots of encouragement. Thank you. But they said, we didn't mean it as encouragement. I said, that's okay. I took it that way anyway. I haven't been angry in 20 years. No one's tried to kill me. The only way I get angry is if they're victimizing some young child or somebody who's in need. I get angry with victimizing, but I don't get angry with people who say things. I mean, people differ all the time. So don't worry about any of that. Lack of self-control. Inflexibility is when you're so narrow that everyone's wrong because you think you're right. If I've learned anything, it's to be flexible, to accommodate opinions without having to embrace them. The most difficult thing in our society is over-emotionality, because it's difficult to change, because it's usually either a combination of inborn, but especially as young children. What I really worry about are homes that get all upset and fly off the handle and start arguing and get this big off-the-wall kind of thing. Emotionality should be no problem, can do. You see the accident, you pull out the flares, you direct the traffic. The time to really get cool is when things are really tough. And the people who are overly emotional can really be swayed by the media and the sound bites. Limits versus limitations. I want to set myself free. I'm tired of having the media control me. Limits are physical, limitations are psychological. You'll never outgrow the limitations. You'll only set new ones within which you must live. Everyone has an income limitation. They believe they're only worth so much. Add a zero. I dare you to add a zero on your income. You'll find that you're as good as the best, but no better than the rest, but as good as the best. If you can separate your limits, which are age, maybe physical characteristics, limitations are psychological. And of course, the ones we place on ourselves are the biggest ones of all. I've always said that POW, prisoner of war, Prince of Wales, putting on weight, power of women, psychology of winning. POW is a bumper sticker. It doesn't mean anything unless you have experience with it. Little boy looked at POW, P-O-W, and went, POW. I said, yeah, POW to you, P-O-W, Prince of Wales to me. He said, putting on weight to you, sir. You are who you were until now. You will become what you've learned this weekend over 250,000 hours of past conditioning if you're 40. So if you're 40 years old, you'll get 12 hours over 250,000. You will not have a life-changing experience unless you reorganize the iceberg, the denominator. View where you came from differently than you now view it. Failure is fertilizer. It's a learning experience. Don't wallow in it. Grow from it. Never carry failure forward. It's an event, not a person. There are no failures. There are just learning experiences. Future behavior is based on re-recording on top of the old conditioning, which you cannot erase. New information. Price of success is very expensive. It involves personal responsibility, distancing yourself from negative peer groups, getting outside your comfort zone, and taking responsibility for the outcomes. And this is really the first major point. For many, many years, I watched a lot of television because it was tension relieving. I knew it wasn't goal achieving. Tension relieving or goal achieving? How are your evenings? What are your weekends? How do you spend your free time? What do you control in your life? You certainly control your spiritual beliefs, so believe strongly the way you want. You control your thoughts and attitudes, which come out of your beliefs. You certainly control your goals. They're yours. Your commitments to your goals, no one controls those but you, and your priorities, you control. Your role models, you don't always control them, and your kids are really attracted and fascinated by the Britney Spears syndrome. They're attracted by celebrities. They're attracted by action and violence. Why? It's just visceral. It's like a roller coaster ride where you put your arms up. It frightens you, but you want to do it again. And so there's this role modeling going on. Unfortunately, many of their personal lives don't match their money accomplishments. Your knowledge sources, you control those. You control your memberships, who you join. You control whether you listen or talk. And the most important thing I've learned is that third one, your free time, which I call prime time. Why is it prime time? Because it's from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 nights a week. I'm tired of watching other people making money having fun in their professions. They want us to watch so they can get ratings and earn more money. And we watch them because we're unhooking from the monotony of our lives and we're hoping to somehow escape from the drudgery of regular life to live through the celebrities and reality television. It actually entertains us. But if you will, understand, I've written 15 books and every one has been written in prime time. 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and on Saturdays. You see, I can't write during the week. I'm earning money. I'm putting food on the table. I have to be doing in prime time what the rest of the population is not willing to do. And the differentiation between success and mediocrity is what you do in prime time. Whether you read, whether you write, whether you computer, network, and whether you have intimacy. And the other thing you can do in prime time, which is fantastic, is get off the couch and out. Get out of the house and into ethnic restaurants. Get to job fairs, computer shows, anything that will let you and your family realize the options that you have in a world so full of abundance that it's like a gingerbread world. If you'll just take your children out of the television internet world and out to where it's happening and live it rather than watch it. You control your friendships, educational level, and you do control your discretionary income, which we call disposable income in the United States. We call it disposable because we get any extra, we dispose of it as quickly as we can. That way we buy things that make us feel good and we go places and put it on our MasterCard. Buy now, pay never. Response to daily events. You control your response, and that's why it's so important to understand that bad news sells. The fire that burns another warms the general population, the fact they're glad they weren't the victim of the day. So people pass on bad news, it insulates them and isolates them from the tragedies that are happening to other people. Please understand, good news never sells because it's elevator music. Good news is no news at all. So the only thing you'll witness is everything that's happening that's bad, and it'll give you just a little bit of a feeling of jaded concern, unless you understand that it's been going on since the beginning of time. Energy crisis looms, whale blubber shortage, 1862. Your own internal standards, best in your knowledge, rewards and consequences. And please, as long as your children don't get either physically or emotionally damaged, don't take their lunch to school when they forget it. Tell them we'll be eating early tonight and ask them to borrow some lunch money or a sandwich from one of their friends and let them experience the logical consequence or reward of their own actions and then put their lunch by the door the next day. But please, don't create turkeys when you want to create eagles who can fly from the nest. CEO of your own life, but a team player? Yes. The statue of responsibility. Many speakers like me talk about Viktor Frankl, V-I-K-T-O-R-F-R-A-N-K-L. He led the resistance movement in Auschwitz and Dachau. He watched with, if you will, detachment, people who became virtual saints or animals, depending on whether they ate or didn't. And he found the most curious thing, and Jim alluded to it earlier. Shared responsibility creates a very interesting aspect physically. If you eat all the bread that you have, you live. If you eat only a piece of the bread but share the other part, you live longer than if you ate all the bread. Why? because you're taking responsibility for someone other than yourself, so you're accountable. You're looking beyond yourself. Viktor Frankl, many years ago before he died, I think he died in 1995, but Viktor Frankl came to, like Solzhenitsyn did from Russia, and said that we should erect on Alcatraz the Statue of Responsibility. And I've been petitioning for it. It won't be built. Usually they want a casino or just a tourist place out there in the old rusting Alcatraz. But you remember what that island rock would be like if she was standing on it. Think about her, the Statue of Responsibility, the twin of the Statue of Liberty. You remember the French gave us the Statue of Liberty. And she stands tall, guarding Ellis Island at Battery Park. And she has, remember, the chains and the tablet in one hand and the torch in the other. And the torch says, bring me your tired and hungry. Come on in, immigrants. Free to choose, free to win, free to lose. This country gives you that freedom of choice. But on the other harbor, in San Francisco, on Alcatraz, should be the other lady, the forgotten side of freedom. The reason no society has ever survived its own success, because they forgot what happens when you make a choice. You always get the reward of the unfailing boomerang. Your rewards will always equal the quality and amount of service you render first. And there she stands, looking out the Golden Gate Bridge, the Statue of Responsibility, an eagle in one hand, the great American desire to be free of all restrictions, to do what we want, say what we want, dress how we want, be how we want. But in the other hand of the Statue of Responsibility is a baby, which signifies our responsibility to the next generation. For every choice that we make, we have to live with that choice for generations to come. Well, it won't be built. And I learned early about responsibility because I was a chauvinistic pig Navy Top Gun jet pilot at Miramar just when Tom Cruise was crawling around with a pacifier then, too. I wore my flight suit to mow the lawn. The neighbors would know who lived next door. Put my helmet on, drove a Porsche Targa looking for Honda Civics. Used to chase Hondas. Get over there. I'm only in second. Blow sailboats back to the starting line in San Diego Harbor. One sailboat gets ahead, it's not fair. You blow them all back and start over again. The greatest thrill of a Navy pilot is that when you're 22, you can't die. So you believe you're immortal. So you find a farmer. He's driving a John Deere, which you know is Russian. It's a half track, and he's plowing alfalfa over in the Imperial Valley. There's four of us. We pretend we're the Blue Angels. We come in from the four points of the compass, supersonic, so he can't hear us coming. We do a fleur-de-lis air show and hit the afterburner, coming straight down in his tractor, and raise it off the bean patch. It's called levitation, the helicopter effect. The farmer looks frightened. It hits the irrigation ditch. He leaps off the tractor. But a farmer is the only person that can leap off his tractor and memorize your number going by. And then call the authorities. It was those Navy guys again. That's the mentality I had. Two Charles Bronson Viva Zapata bullet belts, a .45. They take me hostage. They take me dead. Crocodile Dundee knife walked into my kitchen, threw my gun belt on the counter. The warrior is home and he's hungry. My wife said, have a bud. It's in the fridge. What you doing there? I'm trying to feed your daughter Gerber's strained squash and she won't eat it. I said, she eats what we give her. I was raised with Ross Perot. She said, she doesn't like it. That's why I'm giving her applesauce and some selections. I said, selections? Don't give her any dessert unless she cleans her plate. That's the way we were raised, which is why I'm chubby today. I just clean my plate no matter if I'm hungry or not. He said, she won't eat it. And I said, I'll show you what she'll do. You want to learn how to raise children? Use the old power management. Firings will continue until morale improves. I'll show you. Put my helmet on. Daughter strapped in, can't get out. 11 months old, perfect. Open up, management. Gums clamped shut in defiance, pupils pinpointed in her eyeballs. Well, you don't like to be intimidated, huh? Maybe you're like your father, mind of your own. I'll give you the managing by wandering about I learned from Stephen Covey. What you do is you you eat half the jar of Gerber's strained squash yourself. That way the child sees a role model and mentor doing what you want them to do. Then they watch you doing it, they love and respect you, and then they do it. It's called airplane in the hangar. Airplane in the hangar. Delicious fiber-based carbohydrate, food of the gods. I saw her eyes flash with anger, and I knew what she was thinking, although she could not talk. Go ahead, fatso, you like it, you eat it. I said, don't you look at your father like that. You don't look at your father like that. You eat what we give you. The phone rang, my wife left. Good, time for me to take over. A little power management, use fear. Baby buyer's coming by and I don't need much money. I did what no person should ever do to a child. I've never done it again. No one was watching except God, and he was letting me make a fool of myself. I pushed her cheeks together. Can you imagine anyone doing that with an 11-month-old child strapped in a high chair? That's what you really call arrogance. I stuffed it full of squash like every good father would do. She decided to die by holding her breath. Her face turned red and purple. So did mine. I said, you're not the only child. Before you die, you'll swallow. Stop holding your breath. 15 seconds gone on the kitchen clock. No brain damage. Hang on. Put a mirror under her nose. No condensation. That's okay. Come on, honey. 5 bites of squash. Gets 1 bite of applesauce. Has a commission if the squash clears. Any question? And then she began to make rapid decisions at 11 months old. Angle, range, distance. I felt the linear accelerator through the nozzle effect. As you know, when you squeeze a hose at the end, it goes further. As I squeezed, she exhaled, and a steady stream of Mount St. Helen went up my nasal pituitary area. I made a fatal Southern California yuppie air. I went, have you ever snorted squash? It burns, it clogs. I tripped on the high chair and fell convulsing on the floor. Fortunately, I was wearing my helmet. My wife, Southern Baptist, walked in. She said, what happened, Top Gun? I said, nothing. She doesn't like squash. Don't make a big deal about it. The years have flown. The children have grown and flown. But sometimes us old road warriors don't come to these meetings and commit to change. My kids, grown and flown, come over for Easter dinner. I gave them their inheritance meeting. I dare you to give your children an inheritance meeting when they reach about 18 to 20. What you do is you bring them all over and tell them how much they're going to inherit as a result of your untimely demise at some point in the future. They'll come dressed in designer clothing. They'll come early, and they'll hang on every word. And I dare you to say, we want you to have the same joy of earning that we've had. So there won't be any windfall at the end of the road, because we know you'll want to take a world trip, a cruise, or buy a new Ferrari. Instead, we're going to give you education and help you if things go bad, but we're going to give you the same joy of personal responsibility and earning that we have had. Oh, my children, we love you so much. And the residual of our estate is going to abused orphans who've never had a mother or father or education. We feel like abused orphans. I said, how do you account for the fact your adopted sister from Mexico is doing better than some of you? She said, easy to explain. We have your genes. I said, well, yeah. Yeah, you treated her like a customer and us like employees. We love her, Dad. Don't call her adopted. Drop the adjectives. My daughter said to me, Dad, I noticed we have some summer squash with marshmallow and pineapple in it to kill the taste. I said, yeah, you have summer squash. Your grandma brought potluck. And you'll eat grandma's squash. You get Haagen-Dazs for dessert if you clean your plate. You eat what grandma brought. She has a heart valve problem, needs lots of encouragement. But I don't like squash, Dad. I never have. Well, there's a squash gene or it's El Nino. I don't know why you don't like squash. She said, we do. I said, yeah, your mother tried to force feed you when you were young. She said it was El Padre, not El Nino. It was you, Dad. And one thing I've learned, children take over very early in life and start making choices. And punishment is also if you will, not a good thing. It's different than discipline. Punishment gets a reaction, and therefore people will act up in order to get punished. At least they're getting attention. And please, if you have small children, please don't give them treats and goodies when they whine. Because if whining gets a reward, the whining will accelerate and become a tantrum, which gets more rewards. And if you wait till the children are in public, it's way too late, because you can't let them act up in public. So please, at home, delay their gratification and let them get a logical consequence to their action, which is usually a timeout or a penalty box or a loss of a small privilege, but not punishment, because it's a form, if you will, of reward. Every choice carries a responsibility of living with it. And the second point, beyond self-determination. Okay, all right, I'm driving. And God says that I should make decisions and follow role models with proven track records of success. So what you're saying is that you deal the cards and I play the cards based on what I believe is right. Yes. The second Olympic ring would be self-esteem, which I really believe in. I believe that winners believe in their dreams when that's all they have to hang on to. I believe that what gets in the way is fear. And fear is always of catastrophic danger. Fear is of, obviously, of rejection. Fear is of failure and of change, the unfamiliar. The unknown, the unfamiliar, the rejection. The bottom one is where I've been stuck. Most speakers claim they're raised in a poor family. I was. My father was a penniless alcoholic, died of lung cancer and cirrhosis of the liver. He said, these things will kill you, and they did. And he smoked because he saw the movie actors and actresses smoke. And during our days, the best seats in the theaters were all smoking. They were called the loges, and they were all leather with ashtrays. And so the smokers would sit in the best seats in the house. They'd buy the cigarettes out in the lobby and be smoking, and we could just barely see the screen, which is why we sat in front. So he drank and smoked himself to death. And as a result, I grew up with the fear of success, doubting myself and feeling guilty when I had success. If you've come from a family that does not have money or success, you might think that you're just a little reckless, believing that you're worth it. But overcome the fear of doubt and the fear of guilt. Guilt is when you get the biggest piece of cake at your own birthday. Guilt is when you do well and other people say, got lucky. And they think you're selfish because you're successful, but you must be able to step out and forward and handle the guilt and doubt that other people may have. False evidence appearing real, all the speakers use that. Ignorance, what will happen? Prejudice, I can't forget what happened. And premonition, it will happen again. The mind is incredible. It'll happen again, I know it. I can't forget what happened. I'm not going to get married again because of that experience. And what will happen in the future? I've just written a book, Safari to the Soul, How to Overcome Fear in the Savage Paradise Called Life. I think life is a savage paradise. I think it's a paradise to people who know how to work with it, and it's a savage place for those who don't. And the most important thing to understand is that life is a jungle, and a jungle is neutral. Life is a backdrop, and you and I are the players. The question is, do you want to be an unfamiliar tourist in the jungle, or do you want to be a guide? If you're a guide, you understand. You understand that there's breadfruit, bananas, mangoes, papayas, and clean water and places to hide. If you're a tourist, there are black mambas, yellow mambas, scorpions, lions, tigers, and there's malaria and yellow fever. There's all the dangers if you're inexperienced. If you're experienced, you see the potential. If you're inexperienced, you see the danger. Knowledge, training, skills, and experience overcome fear. You get role models, coaches, and mentors. They help you learn the correct swing. And then you gain courage and confidence with knowledge and training. The best way to overcome fear is knowledge and action, and that's why you're here. You're here to eliminate the fear of the unknown, the fear of rejection, the fear of change, and the fear of success. Self-esteem, I'd like to give it to every child in the world, a deep down inside the skin feeling of your own worth, regardless of your age, your looks, your ethnicity, your gender, or your background. Given my parents and my background, I'm glad I'm me. I'd rather be me living at this time than any other time in history. I'm not the best looking in the group. I look my best in a group. Self-esteem is believing that you have enough potential to become a world-class person. And all you need to do is find somebody else who believes enough in you to help coach you through it and mentor you through it. Regardless of current performance, that's the problem, isn't it? But I'm not earning. I haven't done anything. How can I feel good if I haven't done it yet? Well, that's just it. It's potential, not performance. And you'll understand. If there were four legs to the chair or four cornerstones, the four legs would certainly become affiliation and belonging. A gang is when you belong even if it's wrong, but it gives you power. If you don't belong at home, you belong to a gang. Everyone wants to belong to a winning team. One of the reasons that motherly love is the greatest, it's the affiliation between mother and child that creates the optimism of self-esteem. The father is very important because without a father, you tend to want to associate with the outside gang and break away. So belonging is a winning family or team. We all want an esprit de corps. We all want to hang around winners. Worthiness is very difficult to get, especially today, because we see athletes and celebrities who do these incredible things and we don't think we measure up. If you have children still, make sure you go into their room just before they go to sleep and create a straitjacket out of their sheets and blankets. Fold them over so they can't move. And they're lying there on their pillow and they can't move their head away from you. All animals out, cell phone off, computer shut down, video games not there, and you've got them. Hi, I've been watching you and you're about the most special human being I've ever met. I'm so glad to be your parent. I love you so much unconditionally. There's no conditions on my love. I love you so much. And having a feeling of worthiness, regardless of what you're doing, is the underpinning of unconditional love and built-in value.